Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
And now the alternative, the GOP unveiling their infrastructure bill. We'll give you the details. A week to commemorate workers who pay the ultimate price. And today on the show, the IBEW out of Austin, Texas, and the Transportation Trades Department of the Labor Federation. Welcome to the Monday, April 26th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, do this like so many people are doing in America. Just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We'd appreciate a five-star rating. We have two guests on the show today. First guest, we're going to go to Austin, Texas, and join Ryan Pollock. Ryan is a union journeyman electrician out of IBEW Local 520, which is based right in Austin. He started getting involved with his local about 4 years ago after learning to organize with the Austin chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America. He joined Local 520 staff in April of last year as the lead organizer and is now serving on the executive board of the Austin Central Labor Council and is now one of a few acting spokespeople for the Labor Network for Sustainability's Young Worker Project. Number one, we're going to talk about the Green New Deal. And when you talk about Texas and the Green New Deal, a lot of people say, what? Huh? What are you talking about? Just talked about this on the show on Friday when Fox News came down on the Green New Deal because of the power crisis when they had that horrible storm down there. What's that storm all about? That storm is about climate change. And Ryan authored a piece titled, A Green New Deal Can Win Even Among Building Trade Unions. And he talks about his journey trying to convince his fellow brothers and sisters about the Green New Deal. He writes, I made my way from the stakeholder meeting to the IBEW caucus, made up of about 60 IBEW workers from across Texas. Many of them work in oil refineries, coal-fired power plants. And I was surprised to find a majority of the membership was already on board with the Green New Deal. Our homes, jobs, conditions, and overall quality of life are being threatened more and more with each passing day, as even fewer and fewer of those who identify with the political right in the United States are able to deny the causes of climate change. These workers are already reckoning with the fact that the jobs they rely on today will ruin them tomorrow. So we'll talk about that conversation. Where is it going? And there's some legislation we're going to delve into. House Bill 2221. And that deals with electric vehicles, electrified mass transit. And apparently, there's a lot of corporations moving to Austin, Texas because of a variety of reasons. You got better weather, usually better weather, lower costs of business, lower taxes. The other problem is low compensation. And obviously, with the unions getting involved, we want to raise the wages. That's important. If there's going to be growth, those wages have to grow as well. So we'll mix it all up with Ryan Pollock as our first guest. Greg Regan, on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department of the Labor Federation, will be joining us, and he's going to talk about the American Jobs Plan. President Biden has unveiled his $2 trillion plan dealing with infrastructure. And if you go to the webpage, ttd.org, there's a lot of information there. Greg writes, as the U.S. begins to recover and rebuild from the COVID-19 pandemic, the executive committee of the TTD gathered recently to assess the immediate short-term and long-term needs of transportation workers and the systems they operate, recognizing that the key to sustained economic recovery for working families rests with Biden's Americans Jobs Plan. The 33 transportation union leaders also discuss capitalizing on the once-in-a-generation opportunity to rebuild the middle class and strengthen unions by making transformative investments in our transportation system and infrastructure. Greg says the following: we have a unique opportunity to make generational investments in our transportation system and set a new, better, and more equitable course for our country. And importantly, we have a leader in the White House who recognizes the contributions of and is prioritizing the needs of working people, including the proud union members who keep America moving. Transportation labor is committed to working with Congress and this administration to enhance the safety of our frontline workforce, continue creating good union jobs in transportation, and ensure President Biden's American Jobs Plan becomes a reality. We're going to get into some specifics, too. This is labor's aggressive agenda for this year and beyond when it comes to protecting and creating good union jobs. Number one, strengthen the U.S. flag fleet. Restore, strengthen, and enforce Fly America rules. Protect the U.S. aviation industry jobs from dangerous flag of convenience business models. Ensure aviation and rail employees receive the pay and workplace protections that they deserve. Ensure federally supported transportation jobs are good jobs. All this is posted on the TTD website, ttd.org. And while we're talking about it, we have done several shows about the plight of bus drivers, subway drivers, especially in the pandemic. And I want to take you to a Twitter feed here. This is posted on the website as well. A fellow by the name of Terrence Lane. And Terrence points out that transportation workers have put their lives on the line to keep this country moving, even through the darkest days of the pandemic. Listen to what he says.
From the beginning of this pandemic, my coworkers and I have stepped up to the call to battle this microbial killer called COVID-19 by making sure that the buses and trains of this city continue to move. And there have been consequences. Over 130 of us have perished. Thousands more have been infected with COVID-19, and many of us are still suffering the enduring, long-term after effects and ailments of an initial COVID-19 infection. We're not looking for a ticker tape parade down the canyon of heroes. What we are looking for is to be recognized and treated with basic human decency.
Now, that's from a Twitter feed on the Transportation Trades Department website. You can find more at COVID Transportation Stories, at COVID Transportation Stories. There's a whole lot more to that video, and there's other people speaking out. And this is very significant because today, well, actually yesterday, marks the beginning of Workers' Memorial Week. Now, Wednesday is actually Workers' Memorial Day, and that's a day to honor and remember the workers who have been killed or injured on the job. Now, Greg Regan is going to talk about it on behalf of the transportation workers, and we're going to be talking to various guests on the show this week. And the AFL-CIO has been on this since, oh my gosh, well, let me just go back 50 years. 50 years ago, on April 28th, the Occupational Safety and Health Act went into effect. After the tireless efforts of the labor movement, who drew major attention to work-related deaths and injuries, organized for safer working conditions, and demanded action from their government. So it was on April 28th of 1971 that OSHA began in this country. And this year, it's the 50th anniversary of OSHA. Now, the AFL-CIO did not recognize Workers' Memorial Day until 1989. So every year since 1989, they talk about Workers' Memorial Day. This week, and primarily because of the pandemic, and my gosh, those numbers are still, they're still coming in. They are making it Workers' Memorial Week to call attention to what is basically the toll of neglect. Now, The 2020 edition of the Death on the Job should be coming out later this week. And last year, what we have is 5,250. That's the number of workers killed on the job in the United States. And actually, that came out in 2020, but it doesn't reflect 2020 numbers. That's from 2018. That's how far behind they are. There's 50,000 estimated number of deaths each year attributed to occupational diseases caused by chemical exposures. I want to salute the National COSH. That's the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. And they're doing a speak out tomorrow. And this is going to be at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And they will feature testimony from injured workers, surviving family members, co-workers, and local organizers. They will release their deadly risks, costly failures report during the event, which documents the impact of COVID-19 and other workplace hazards on workers and families during 2020 and 2021. Now, they may have some updated figures. We'll find out when they have that press conference tomorrow. And just a couple of people that will be taking part in the National Nurses Union. They'll have a rep speaking about a co-worker who died from COVID-19 at a hospital in Kansas City. There's a one individual, Hugo. His name is Hugo. He's a survivor of the fatal explosion at the Foundation Food Group in Gainesville, Georgia, which claimed six lives. We talked about this earlier this month. It was the April 2nd show. If you go to awfradio.com, on the April 2nd show, we had Yanira Manera, who is with the Labor Council for Latin American Achievement, and she was talking about that extensively on that show. There's also a member from Workers' Dignity speaking about her brother, Gustavo Ramirez, who died at the age of 16 from a preventable fall on a Nashville construction site. First question you have to ask there, why was a 16-year-old on that construction site? So Workers' Memorial Week has kicked off in America. More to come on that. Well, the Republicans have announced their infrastructure plan. A group of Senate Republicans last week laid out what they see as a roadmap to overhauling the nation's crumbling infrastructure system. The framework put forward by Senator Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia and Roger Wicker of Mississippi calls for spending $568 billion toward renewing America's roads, bridges, ports, and waterways, the so-called traditional infrastructure. Okay, $568 billion. Biden wants $2 trillion, which is almost four times that. Capito called the GOP plan the biggest and most robust proposal Republicans have ever offered on infrastructure, and Wicker described it as a very generous offer that the White House should take seriously. Senator Bob Casey, Democrat out of Pennsylvania, told the Huffington Post, well, I think it's kind of light. Meanwhile, Joe Manchin, top advocate for bipartisan efforts on infrastructure, called the plan a starting point. And he added that he expects Republicans to negotiate in good faith and eventually accept a larger package. Now, here's the deal. The five-year Republican plan includes $299 billion for roads and bridges, which is more than double what's called for in Biden's American Jobs Plan. However, it would spend much less on other infrastructure categories like rail, broadband, and drinking water. On top of that, the GOP plan is silent on electric vehicles, which is a key priority for the Democrats. The GOP plan offers very few specifics on how to pay for the spending. It does suggest taxing electric cars and repurposing unspent COVID-19 relief funds. So, They don't talk about electric vehicles, but they want to text whatever vehicles are out there now. Okay, it's a starting point. More to come. We have to break when we come back. IBEW 520 out of Austin, Texas.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This is my new best friend, Esther. She might look like any normal, playful puppy, but Esther's being raised to become a canine companion for independence assistance dog for a person with a disability. To get there, she needs lots of loving care and attention, plenty of exercise, and good eating habits so that she can live a long and healthy life for her future family. Visit CCI.org or call 1-800-572-BARK. Raise a puppy, change a life. You can make a world of difference in the life of a person with a disability.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to the show. Don't forget you can check us out on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the North Coast Labor Federation, affiliated, of course, with the AFL-CIO. Let's go to line number one right now. And welcome to the show from Austin, Texas, Ryan Pollack. Ryan, who is with the electrical workers, IBEW Local 520. You could find them online at IBEW520.org. And they are in the capital of Texas, Austin, Texas, which is probably one of the more liberal parts of Texas. You're talking about a right-to-work state. And we're also going to talk about the Green New Deal, which may not be an easy sell, but Brian is doing his best, no doubt about that. Ryan, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
So let's get into your background a little bit, Ryan, and talk to me why you got involved with the first of all, the trades, specifically with the electrical workers.
I was working in the service industry for over a decade for a long time there, and then started working for some other people when I was a valet downtown, and one of the owners in the building started a new solar company and started hiring all my coworkers who had nice jobs before the recession, and then I said, how do I get one of those nice jobs? Because they were starting out at like $75K in 2010. And I was like, oh. And he suggested I become a journeyman electrician. And so that changed my entire life, really. Totally took it in a very different direction. And I did that for a couple of years until I started getting involved with the DSA here in Austin, helping build this chapter up to one of the most successful chapters in the country. And through that, I learned organizing, particularly in our campaign for paid sick days in Texas. Started with a local campaign in Austin for paid sick days in this city, and then moved on to San Antonio and Dallas, where we won until the state shut it down in the courts. But during that fight, my local actually got really involved. It was a very big coalition. and we'd see each other. I'd be wearing like my IBEW shirt, hanging out with the DSAers, and we'd be looking at each other like, hey, you know. So we'd show up at what do they call them, stakeholder meetings, and they'd start asking me, like, who is this guy? And so that's how I started really getting involved with the union and realizing the power of unions.
And you're in a very, very conservative state. Now, Austin is a little bit different, though. Isn't Austin pretty progressive?
A bit more at times. I tend to think it's more libertarian than the reputation gives it, you know, credit for. But we've been able to make some moves around here.
Good, good, good. Talk to me about the Green New Deal. And you authored a piece, and this is posted on the website too, IBEW Local 520, A Green New Deal Can Win Even Among Building Trades Unions. And I tell you, this is the timing on this is really, really good because of what you went through down there in Texas with the storm. And
right.
How so many politicians blamed windmills and solar. Maybe you could, I tell you, this had to probably really raise your blood pressure some when you're trying to promote the Green New Deal and they're blaming the Green New Deal as far as why they don't have power in Texas. So I'd like to hear your perspective on that.
Oh, yeah, that made no sense. Like, here I am. We have no power, no water, and I'm trying to make sure my family and friends and community are all, you know, going to be able to survive. And then I have to get on Twitter and start firing off, to correct all this misinformation out there that they're spreading before people start turning on, you know, wind generators, blaming them for the power being out when that was only like 4 gigawatts of the entire 30 to 35 gigawatts went out. You know, it was natural gas was the biggest cause.
So, Ryan, when you push back on that, what happened? Did some people say, OK, you're right? Or they say, wait a minute, maybe we have to take another look at this. How did that pan out?
Luckily, it was pretty clear before I even said anything to most people that, you know, Abbott was full of it and just making things up off the top of his head. It didn't make any sense, you know. So even Greg Abbott had to walk it back the next day in speeches and all that and concede that, like, yeah, okay, most of that was natural gas and it's pretty much the whole system. So it was pretty easy to see through.
Yeah, and I understand, too, like the windmills, if they were winterized properly, which they probably don't do in Texas. I mean, this was a freak storm. But if that were the case, they would have been still working and probably less people would have been without power. But right. it's a different situation. I didn't realize, too, that Texas wasn't part of the national power grid. Where is the debate on that right now because of what you went through down there? Are they saying, well, maybe we need to rethink things? What's the story?
No, they're pretty much holding steady. And, you know, they made some heads roll at the top of ERCOT, replaced some board members, and seems like they're pretty much wiping their hands of it. And nobody's really talking about it. So the news cycle has moved on.
So let's talk about what you put together in your piece, A Green New Deal Can Win. And you know, I always say you got to walk before you can run. And you want to push this deal through in Texas. And at first you didn't get much buy-in, especially among your fellow trades members, but it seems to be escalating now. Can you walk us through that, Ryan?
Yeah, that ball has slowly gotten rolling. So in doing my research, I discovered a resolution from the Alameda, California CLC and took that resolution, tweaked it a little bit to make it more relevant to Austin and Central Texas. And then I brought that to my own Central Labor Council, which I had just been appointed delegate to. And that ended up passing unanimously, very enthusiastically. And then a couple weeks later was going to be the Constitutional Convention for the Texas AFL-CIO. So I went ahead and submitted it, thinking, you know, we'll see what happens here. Just not expecting much. And then I got a call from Texas AFL-CIO saying, hey, this is really great. We're excited about this. You know, but good luck. It's they didn't really expect much to happen. But they offered to facilitate it as much as possible because they thought it was an important conversation to have. And so we had a couple of stakeholder meetings. We caucused, and people actually moved a lot. The people who you would even expect to move the least were very, very open to it. And that shocked people. And then that started really getting the ball rolling around here.
So it sounds like you're getting labor on board. Now the next step would be to get the politicians on board. You know how difficult that's going to be, but at least you've got a consensus now among labor, right?
Well, I'm starting to build a consensus among leadership. So we also still need to get the rank and file buy-in as well. So that's another thing we're starting to figure out now is getting that buy-in, working on education around what it actually means that we're doing, because there is so much misinformation around there, and there hasn't been enough correction out there. So we've got to figure out how to work that out.
Well, one of the big problems with solar and wind is the fact that there's very little union activity in those two categories. And hopefully we need more organizing, number one, because the jobs in those in wind and solar, I mean, they're paying what I'm hearing like $20 an hour, where you got fossil fuels. I mean, refinery jobs, you know this, down in Texas, they're making probably 2-3 times, maybe 4 times that with overtime. So, you got this transformation going on right now. But that being said, the fossil fuel jobs, they're not in our future. That's the thing. I mean, eventually they're going to run out. So we got to start somewhere. Where does that stand in this conversation? I mean, are they starting to realize that, hey, the end is near, we got to make this switch? Is that conversation happening, Ryan?
It is. And now for the past year, I got hired on staff at my local as an organizer. So we're seeing a ton of people coming out of the oil fields looking to get into inside electrical and working with us. So you're seeing the long time skilled hands jumping ship because they see the writing on the wall. And and even on top of that, when you talk to these refinery workers in Houston, talking to leadership down there, they say like, oh, they'll never give up this, they'll never give up that. I'm like, you know, and they have these really good jobs, and I asked them, like, you know, that's cool, but they've had their fifth 500-year flood in under 5 years. So, you know, what's that going to look like? What good is having this good job when your house is underwater, you know?
Right.
And they're feeling that. And they're, you know, they experience it firsthand. So it's getting more and more difficult to ignore it. And that's where we're really getting to.
All right. Ryan, can you stay with us for another segment here on the show? I got some more questions for you.
Yeah, can do.
Real good. Ryan Pollock is his name. He's a journeyman electrician for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 520, based in Austin, Texas. We'll continue talking with him. Greg Regan is going to talk about the American Jobs Plan and the fact that we are in Workers Memorial Week. It's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at uaw.org.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange, news, talk, sports, and workforce politics, the fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, and welcome back to the show. Don't forget, we're available on five platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find them online at oft.aft.org. Let's go back to our live line. We're talking the Green New Deal. We're talking Texas Energy. Ryan Pollack is joining us on behalf of IBEW Local 520. Website is IBEW520.org. We touched on the Green New Deal a bit. He's trying to move the needle in the right direction down there in Texas. Not an easy task. Austin is a little bit more liberal than the rest of Texas, and he's doing his best, and he's making some headway. Talk to me about House Bill 2221, which deals with electric vehicles. What is this all about, Ryan?
So that's a bill working on setting up public charging stations. They're trying to build that infrastructure so that, you know, people feel comfortable buying these cars, knowing that they'll have a place to refuel and all that. I was asked to be involved in that. I got a little bit of input in, but honestly, I haven't been able to spend a whole lot of time on it because we're so busy trying to organize members in so that we can get, you know, the Tesla job built, which is going to have a peak of about 1,000 electricians on it. And there aren't that many electricians available in the entire country. So I've been a little slammed.
So give me some more details on that. What, Tesla's building a facility or planning to build a facility there?
We're building a gigafactory here. And now, as of the other day, Elon Musk announced a second phase to that factory, and now we know we have OEM parts manufacturers coming in to support as well, and they're talking about Austin becoming the Detroit of electric vehicles. So I'm thinking people have word that there are other manufacturers headed this way as well as Tesla. So Texas is. It appears to be setting itself up to be that. And that's part of what this whole network of public chargers is all about.
Interesting. So the IBEW obviously has a handle in that. Here's my concern. Elon Musk is not what you call a union-friendly guy. And, you know, yep. Detroit is obviously the big three. They're all unionized and all that. Where does that stand in the conversation down there?
Well, we really weren't happy at first, and we still have mixed feelings about it because it's a dangerous game. The guy's got a lot of money. He's got a lot of union busting lawyers ready to go. But he did just take that hit the other day where it was found he was involved in some ULPs. And so we're pretty much getting prepared for whatever we can do. As far as the IBEW, this is a lot of work for us, and this is an opportunity for us to organize a lot of new members. And so far, it's been working out. The local has now recently passed 1,600 members, which is an all-time high, and it's climbing a lot. We were down at a low of about 10% market share in Central Texas, and we're planning on doubling our membership within a year. So,
whoa.
It's good news and bad news. And obviously plenty of labor has their sights on that factory and, you know, maybe ending that, streak of, you know, not being able to organize those Tesla shops. So we'll see what happens there.
Now, is mass transit part of that, too? Because I'm hearing like electric buses. Is that going to be part of that?
I believe so, yes. We're trying to flesh out our bus system in Austin, and I would imagine Texas wide, because we have a lot of roads, and they're talking about doing rail. We are going to have some high speed rail going between Houston and Dallas, but not to Austin yet. So in the meantime, they're going to want something going on for the rest of us in Texas, because this is a massive state, and a lot of people are left out of just a Houston to Dallas line, and even that is going to take some time to build. So it seems to be kind of a stopgap.
Yeah. High-speed rail. Wow, things are really changing down there. That's amazing.
Right.
I have to ask you, with what you just told us right now, that's got to be a boost for your apprenticeship program down there.
I mean, absolutely.
Think of all these kids. I mean, these are going to be really, really good jobs for electrical workers down there. Has that seen a boost yet? Are you seeing a lot of young folks gravitating toward that field?
It has been a boost, but it's still well short of where we need to be. Here in Texas, our wages and compensation and conditions are still well below where they should be, especially when you compare it to similar cities with similar demographics and amount of construction going on and economics like Denver. Denver is very similar to us in that respect, and they're making $8 more an hour on the check, you know, plus other benefits. So just trying to attract people into the trade and to come travel to work here. It's been pretty difficult, but still it's you still got to convince people that in the long run it'll work out so much better than what they have going on for the most part. But it's really rough still getting them in, because that pay right off the bat is not amazing.
Yeah, that's sad. And the politicians have used that in Texas over the years, at least the last maybe 20 years. Hey, come to Texas. We have low taxes. You don't have to worry about unions. We're right to work and the cost of living. And plus, you know, the weather is better, except maybe every once in, 500 years, something
right.
like that, when you have these crazy storms. But how's the I'm just wondering, too, is there an influx of a lot of young people coming in there? And I understand, too, their cost of living might be going up. They're going to have to raise wages eventually, right?
Well, we've been wondering when that's going to happen. You know, what's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back around here? Because the cost of living has just been astronomical, and our wages, my local really first got, you know, got our first real raise in 20 years with this last contract. We did pretty good, you know, getting 5.5%, 4.5%, and then 3% year over year, but it's still well short of where we need to be, and with the severe shortage of hands around here, I'm thinking that's going to put us in a good position, because we're going to start negotiating towards the end of this year for our next one. So with this severe shortage, according to a recent study by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, nationwide, to meet demand, we are 435,000 skilled construction workers short of being able to build everything that everyone's trying to build. And by the year 2023, we'll be 1.4 million skilled hands short of meeting demand. So we've got to do something around here in order to get people into their trades, because all these businesses that are moving here because of the low taxes and the low regulations and low cost of doing business overall are finding out real quick the downside to that. And we warned everybody years ago that, you know, they're all leaving money on the table. It doesn't even make business sense, because nobody's going to be able to do all this work. So I don't know why, but they're, you know, businesses around here are willing to throw money at almost anything but labor. It doesn't make any sense to me, and I don't know how much longer it can go on, but it's gone on much longer than I assumed it would be able to. So who knows?
Yeah. Well, like you said, there's eventually going to be a breaking point. Ryan, just a couple minutes left. I have to ask you, how is Biden's infrastructure plan, the American Jobs Plan, how is that being received down there? And I just did a story at the top of the show. The Republicans want to do like maybe 25-30% of it. I know there's still a lot of debate that needs to be done on this, but what's the talk down there in Austin?
Well, with big federal plans like that, we're used to the state just saying no to even free money. So we're not really sure what to expect from it around here because they're just so obstructionist. And anything nice, especially for Austin, Austin won't see it if anybody gets it. Because they just love to hate us for some reason. It's pretty wild.
If it's free money from a Republican, it's okay. But if it's free money from a Democratic administration, it's probably not that good. That's what it sounds like to me.
Right. It's wild.
Oh, my gosh. I'll tell you. You are a bright spot down there, Ryan. Thank you so much for joining us here on America's Workforce. Let's keep in touch with this because this Green New Deal eventually, the entirety is not going to happen. We all know that. I mean, we compromise on everything, but if we can move the needle in the right direction on it, it's so important. I mean, we're talking about the future.
We can definitely fight for it on a city level, too, even if it's not happening on a federal level. And that's something we're going to start looking at around here.
Very good. Ryan, we're going to leave it on that note. IBEW520.org. It's happening there in Texas, Austin, Texas, specifically. IBEW20.org. Ryan, you take care. Stay safe. Let's circle back in about 6 months, okay?
Thank you very much. You take care, too.
Quick break. Greg Regan on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you are exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly and Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly and Ferraro, trial lawyers.
One in three adults has prediabetes. One in three. That means it could be you, your football buddy, your football buddy, or you, your best man, your worst man, you, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Pre-Diabetes Awareness Partners.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to the show. Don't forget you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast. Also, the same for our Twitter handle, at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show. One of our regulars, Greg Regan, who is the head guy at the Transportation Trades Department affiliated with the AFL-CIO. This is a collection of 33 unions dealing with rail, trucking, air, anything that transports. They're part of the TTD. TTD.org is a website. Hey, Greg, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thanks, Flash. Good to be here.
All right, I want to get into the American Jobs Plan, which was announced in Pittsburgh a couple of weeks ago. By the way, we're going to have the individual that introduced Biden at that press conference in Pittsburgh. He comes from a IBEW local. We're going to have him on the show. That would be the coolest thing, to introduce the president of the United States. Wouldn't that be a cool thing?
Yeah, that would, it would be great.
Yeah. Of course, you're right in the middle of everything there in Washington, D.C., so you rub elbows with these people all the time. So you talk to me about the American Jobs Plan here. Biden's got a $2 trillion plan. I don't know if you saw this, but the Republicans came up with an alternative, and it's, I think, like just shy of $600 billion. And they are going to concentrate just on roads and bridges because that's how they define the infrastructure. I'd like to get your take on this. And obviously, there's a big component for transportation. Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, no, we think that this is there's a unique opportunity right now to do something big, to make the kind of transformational, generational investments in our infrastructure that, frankly, we've been calling for decades. And Biden's plan really does that. There is a debate about what is infrastructure. And, you know, there's components of Biden's plan that he calls human infrastructure that are obviously address a lot of needs in this country. But if we're just looking at what we care about, you're talking about $80 billion for Amtrak, a system that has been neglected since it was started back in the 70s. And that allows you to make some real transformational changes on our passenger rail network, both on the capital of the system, you know, rebuilding these tunnels and bridges and track, but also to expand the access and increase new corridors. We're talking about expanding transit networks across the country so that you have more transit access for more people, creating more reliable service, rebuilding roads and bridges all throughout the country, improving our ports and freight systems so that we can be more competitive across the world. This is the type of generational big thinking legislation that we haven't seen, you know, really since the highway program, and you could go as far back as the New Deal in terms of what we're looking to do. And you know, this is a real moment of opportunity, both because we have a president in charge who is making this his number one priority. We've had a lot of presidents talk about how we quote unquote need to do infrastructure, how we need to improve our infrastructure, but it's always two or three on the list. And of course, you know, there are only so many opportunities in a president's term to pass big legislation. So this is number one, and we're on it. You know, I think that we have the leadership in place to really do something great here.
Well, Greg, you heard me talk about the GOP plan, which is far from the $2 trillion that Biden wants, but it is a starting point. How does that make you feel? And you think we could meet somewhere in the middle or close to Biden's $2 trillion? What's your gut telling you right now?
I hope so. I hope this isn't just a talking point to show that they, I think the GOP recognizes, I mean, there's a lot of people, they've had bipartisan bills in the past that have come out of committees. And I think every elected official recognizes that they need to improve their infrastructure in their state or in their districts. So they can't look like they're standing on the sidelines here. The question is, how serious are they going to get when it comes to actually getting the numbers where they need to be and being as comprehensive as they need to be? And in our view, that's not, you know, I'm not going to. I think that we need broadband. I think we need more schools and water and all that stuff. That's not really the core of what I focus on. I think that needs to happen. But also, I think a lot of times some of these plans, especially coming from the GOP, they're short on transit, for instance, and public infrastructure, the types that aren't geared towards private users or that are money makers for industry. So in our view, there's a public good aspect that needs to be part of this that oftentimes is overlooked in some of the other proposals.
Boy, you hit the nail right on the head when you said money makers, because, you know, transit, primarily serves a big part of the population that's not making big bucks, like the airline industry, okay? I mean, there's a good example there, a good contrast. And you think about all the people on a daily basis in America that need to get on that bus because they can't afford a car to get to work, to get to school, to get wherever they're going. And that they seem to be ignored. They have been ignored for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that the powers to be would finally come to some consensus on this and get this done. So we'll definitely stay on this issue. And I know Biden would like to get something wrapped up by July, and we'll see what happens.
Well, and the other thing I'd add about this is Biden clearly wants to do it in a union focused, working class focused way. You know, if you look at his 25-page proposal, which is not legislative text, but it's a pretty comprehensive proposal. You know, he says union 22 times in 25 pages. It's got everything from Buy America to 13C Davis Bacon, cargo preference on the maritime side. You know, his vision here is to do things where not only are we investing in these infrastructure, but doing it in a way that creates as many good jobs and union jobs as possible, so that we are investing in our own people in a way that frankly we sometimes forget to do.
Yeah. 22 times. I didn't realize that. Yeah, he's a pro-union guy. There's no question. No question. All right. The other issue is Workers' Memorial Day. And actually, we started Workers' Memorial Week. This Wednesday, April 28th, is a day to honor and remember the workers who've been killed or injured while on the job. And we don't have the numbers from last year. Just got them from a couple of years ago. It's been averaging over 5,000 people a year die on the job. And I'm sure with the pandemic last year, that's going to just shoot up there. And we played a little clip from a Twitter feed, which is connected to your website, at COVID Transportation Stories. And we played the clip from, I believe it was Terrence Lane, talking about the workers who put their lives on the line. I don't know if you can speak to that, because a lot of the workers in transportation, these are frontline workers. They had to go to job. They could not do their jobs virtually like so many did in America. And I'd like you to speak to that, especially with this week before us.
Yeah, I think if there is any any week or any day where we need to be recognizing the sacrifices that transportation workers made and all workers made during the pandemic, it's this year. You know, people truly did put their lives on the line. So I think the video we put together, those came from rank and file workers all across the country in every mode, and talked about the experiences they had working through the pandemic, the lack of support they had, both in terms of PPE, in terms of federal support, the fear that they had going to the office, the lost friends and loved ones that succumbed to this disease because they were going to work and putting their own health at risk. And, you know, it tells a really a story not only of people who are putting their commitment to their jobs and to the communities first, but also that they did it with their eyes open and knowing all the risks. And, you know, if you look at where we are right now, and hopefully looking towards the end of this pandemic and people are getting vaccinated and we might be able to see a light at the end of the tunnel, I think we really, really need to recognize all of the sacrifice that went in from people across the country who, you know, weren't able to work from home. And they did it not because, you know, first of all, their jobs are frontline jobs, but they also did it out of a sense of responsibility to our country. And they did it admirably. And I think our government and our people around the country need to recognize that and give them the recognition they deserve.
Yeah, everybody, those of you listening right now, if you go to the hashtag COVID Transportation Stories, COVID Transportation Stories, it's amazing to hear these stories of the frontline workers in America who were essential workers, are essential workers, and many of them are not with us today because they were doing their job. They were simply doing their job. Greg, I'm going to leave it on that note. TTD.org for more stories like that. You keep up the fight, my brother. We'll talk to you next month, okay?
Thank you. Have a good one.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger, and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.